I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Ben Rimmelauer is renowned for his performances off-Broadway, as well as his online writing about the Real Housewives programs. He joins me now to talk about two of his solo shows, Patty Issues and Bad With Money, both of which are now available on audible.com. Rovin Records has made a commitment to present great American plays via digital media, and they have just published these two shows, both of which demonstrate Mr. Rimmelauer's marvelous gifts for storytelling in performance. Patty Issues premiered in 2012 and looks at his lifelong fascination with Patty LuPone and how the obsession helped him understand the tumultuous relationship with his gay father. The show got great notices and the word of mouth from various bold-faced names who took in the show was excellent. LuPone also took in the show and thought it was fantastic. At that point, she and Mr. Rimmelauer had established a working friendship. Bad With Money, as the title suggests, looks at Mr. Rimmelauer's difficulties at staying afloat. It was partially drugs, alcohol, and a lavish lifestyle that made him bad at money. I'll get Ben to tell us how bad it got and just how he's managed to get through it all. I'll also get him to reflect on the stage, his career on and off it, and just what that's meant for understanding the life he lays bare in these recordings. Ben Rimmelauer has contributed to Vulture, Playbill, Out, Time Out New York, Funny or Die, Decider, and other outlets. He's appeared on Real Housewives of New Jersey, Watch What Happens Live, Extreme Makeover, and Billy Eichner and Rachel Dratch's Halloween Adventure. For his work directing and producing off-Broadway plays and stage acts, The Advocate dubbed him the Midas of Cabaret. Visit BenRimmelauer.com as well as at Ben Rimmelauer on Twitter. These productions were directed by Aaron Mark, and of course visit Audible.com for download. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Ben Rimmelauer. Mr. Rimmelauer, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, I should have asked you before we started, did I pronounce your name right?
You did. Nailed it. A first try.
Yeah. But was that the name you were born with?
It was not. I was born Ben Schmonis.
And rather than assume why you changed your name, why did you?
when I was 11 years old, I was adopted by my stepfather.
Hmm. And then, so you grew up in California, though, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. You do talk about what that was like in the show Patty Issues. And I'm wondering because it seems like a very different sort of life than one would live in New York City. I mean, was it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in New York City, and we moved to LA when I was 5. And you know, LA is a relatively suburban lifestyle. I mean, you know, even if you the proper city of LA is not really a proper city.
Yeah.
You know, so it's driving around in station wagons and carpooling and dogs and soccer practice and all that. And I fucking hated it. You know, I was a New York City boy, a Broadway baby, and I missed the rattle of the subway trains and the, did I get that wrong? The rumble of the subway trains, the rattle of the back.
Right. Yeah. So was it because it seems from an early age, there was a desire to want to go into show business. I mean, is that correct on my part that's what you wanted to do? Say.
You know, yes, it is. I mean, the short answer is yes. You know, I think show business felt so second nature to me that I almost didn't. I don't know. As a child, I wanted to be the president. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, I was growing up in an era when the president was a Hollywood actor, so it makes sense that I would confuse the two fields.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and I'll talk about this later, but I mean, it seems awfully confusing now when you have a president who comes from, say, reality television, and just the ubiquity of reality television the last, say, 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the was Patty Issues the first show before Bad with Money, or what's the timeline in terms? It was the first show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's coming up to what? 2002 when that first started?
No, 2012.
Oh, 2012, pardon me. So in the 6 years or so, what was the motivation, say, to put a show like Patty Issues together? I mean, I understand, having heard it, just how an important figure Patty LuPone was to your life, but to want to, say, tell other people that on stage, what was the motivation for that?
It's funny, you know, I had begun my career in theater as a director. I mean, actually, I was directing in high school and college. I did not want to be an actor. I sort of always had an inclination that I ought to write, but I was not doing it. I was just directing. But I was frustrated because as a director, my career is limited by the material that I can get my hands on, you know. Actor can audition, and a playwright, you know, doesn't need a resume. If a producer reads the script and likes it, that's it. But a director is really in a funny position. I had created a show, another show, about Patty LuPone called Leslie Christer Is Patty LuPone at Les Mouches, where we recreated Patty's legendary 1980 midnight cabaret act at the now long since closed club, Les Mouches. It was sort of an environmental theater piece of people coming to see Leslie play Patty at this historic moment, and it was very successful. And that whet my appetite. You know, I wanted to, I got to taste what it's like to be the creator, the author of the show, even though I hadn't written any words, because that was based on an actual true life event.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know what that was going to be, but I started writing blogs and some online kind of journalism, and I was sort of wanting to write a play, but I didn't know what I would write. And then sort of separately from that, I wanted to have an evening in a club where I showed Patty LuPone videos and talked about them, just because that's what I did every night at my apartment with my friends, and I thought it would be fun to open it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Patty I had gotten to know Patty very well when I was a director. In the beginning, I was an assistant director, and I worked on a few shows she was in, and we became friends. And she had given me a lot of her videos, which, of course, I was thrilled to have, these, you know, rare videos. I asked her for permission then to put those in my evening of Patty LuPone videos.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, let me see a draft of what the show's going to be. And when I started writing it, I actually found I was talking much more about myself, and I wound up writing Patty Issues, which has no video whatsoever. Just me talking.
Yeah. Yeah. So from my view of it, she was a very important person in your life growing up. I mean, the minute that you get your hands on the Evita cast recording, something changed, didn't it?
Absolutely.
And so looking back at it all, because I don't know how quickly one understands one's life as they're living it, but, I mean, when you look back at it, just how an important person she is, I mean, that's almost incalculable at this point, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What sort of stuff do you realize about, say, life, yourself, the relationship with your father even, because of her?
Well, you know, the play is really about that, Patty Issues. It's about things that made me sort of come to in my relationship with my father. You know, I mean, the journey of my relationship with Patty LuPone is sort of starts out as almost like a guardian angel or like Jiminy Cricket. You know, I mean, she was sort of this imaginary person to me because she was just a fantasy of this lady on the CD and in the Evita commercial and on television. And I worshipped her, and she sort of was my spirit animal in a way, you know, just my identification with her. And then when I actually got to know her, it was different. You know, there was a real person there. And because Patty is such a great sort of theatrical personality and so larger than life, it was amazing how much the real Patty lined up with the Imagineer, Patty. But ultimately, when I was doing that show, Leslie Christer as Patty LuPone at Les Mouches, there came to be a conflict between me and Patty because she was supportive of the project at first, but then she didn't want it to go on because it was a representation of her that she was not in control of. And that was very hard for me, that my fairy godmother, guardian angel, was not primarily concerned with my best interest, but rather with her own, you know. And I think coming to terms with that and accepting that, and my relationship with Patty continues to this day. I mean, as a matter of fact, after that Leslie Christer show, I produced Patty's album, Patty LuPone at Les Mouches, based on her original performances. So I got to the other side of that conflict with Patty. I was able to accept her. You know, I think part of that's what growing up and becoming an adult is, is realizing that it's nobody else's job to take care of you and that you can do it yourself and that's okay. You know, that you can have these boundaries and separate lives with people and still care about them and enjoy them, you know. And I think coming to that sort of wholeness in my relationship with Patty gave me the perspective to sort of transcend the trauma that I'd been through in my relationship with my father, my biological father, who I was estranged from when I was age 10 or 11 after a bunch of sort of acting out that he had done, basically emotional abuse. And that's why I was adopted by my stepfather. And then, you know, kind of for my life ever since, the distance from my father and the occasional attempts to reconcile that always ended in tears was such a painful burden. And I think that this sort of epiphany over time via Patty LuPone gave me some wisdom and insight into my relationship with my father. And I think that's really what Thai Issues is about.
But for a lot of people, you know, they don't get to meet, say, the star that they like, that they're a fan of, that they worship. So, I mean, what is it like for you to have grown up, say, admiring her as you did, and then now getting to know her and getting to be rather intimate friends with her as you have been?
It's amazing. I mean, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I still get so thrilled anytime she sends me a text, you know? I love when she's on Broadway or doing a concert, going to her dressing room or going out to dinner with her. And, you know, it's an absolute, it's like, you know, it's literally a fantasy come true. And it's for all of the harsh realities of adult life, for all the struggles of making a career in the theater that does not live up to certainly the financial dreams of my youth, you know, I must say, it really is sort of like the dream I had of Broadway as a child to have Patty LuPone, this, you know, sort of Sardi's caricature come to life, be an actual person in my world. It's really wonderful.
She really is a star, isn't she? I mean, a lot of us got to see her recently on the Grammy Awards. And then the other depictions that people might be familiar of her, if they haven't seen her, say, on Broadway, the turn that she had on Girls recently, a generation ago on Life Goes On.
Sure.
Yeah. What makes her, I guess, as special as she is? I mean, she, as I said a moment ago, she really is a star, isn't she? And in a constellation of show business where that sort of star is rarer than it was, say, 50 years ago, right?
Right. Well, you know, she is a combination of different talents. You know, she's a classically trained actor, you know, experienced in repertory theater in a way that very few people in this country are. And, you know, that lends her, I think, a kind of a versatility and adaptability and, you know, just a very sort of practical ability to handle different acting challenges in a way that I think, you know, might be sort of underestimated. And then, you know, and she's got a God-given voice. I mean, she descends from the great Italian opera star, Adelina Patti. I mean, Patti is not for Patricia. Patti is Patti's mother's maiden name.
Mm.
And Adelina Patti was the legendary soprano, Patti's great grand aunt. And, you know, so she comes from that stock with that Sicilian passion. And, you know, I analyze it a little on my show. I think, you know, part of the reason Patti appeals to me is that, you know, I think we have some things in common. She was estranged from her father, and her parents divorced when she was little. And I think, you know, we're both third-generation Americans. And I think that she, there's a fire in her, a need to prove herself. And, you know, it's a combination of, like, an insecurity and an ego, you know. It's a fear of not having something, and like a passionate belief that you deserve it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think growing up in my difficult childhood, I think that Patti was empowering to me because she is such a fiery performer. You know, it's no coincidence that her greatest triumphs have been in these sort of scary characters, like Eva Peron and Rose and Gypsy and the cannibal and Mrs. Lovett and Sweeney Todd. I mean, you know, even just last year in the Danny DeVito movie, the Al Pacino movie, sorry, the Robert De Niro movie, she played Danny DeVito's wife, the comedian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this famous scene where she's, you know, sort of just like attacking Leslie Mann at this bar mitzvah. You know, but that Patti is this sort of scary bitch, and I think that that's thrilling to me. And having a father who was kind of a scary bitch himself, I think that Patti was like my pet dragon. You know, I think that she was a scary bitch that I felt protected by and connected to.
What does she mean? I mean, I understand that she's seen Patti issues and she likes the show. What has she made of, say, your history with her in terms of what she's meant to your life? I mean, do you ever talk? Have you ever talked to her about that and just what she means to you, say?
Yeah, you know, it's it's funny because I think it's, for Patti, there's, you know, it comes through a very specific lens. You know, I think she sees me as you know, a friend and colleague in the theater, but also a fan, and she has many passionate fans. So I think maybe my fandom is a little different than like a fan, you know, out of nowhere because I'm a colleague. But then again, Patti has many colleagues in the theater who are her fans, especially now that she's almost 70 years old. For decades, she's been surrounded by younger performers who grew up listening to her in Evita or watching her in whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that I'm rare perhaps in the intensity. I'm certainly rare in terms of the output of my, in my own career that's been, you know, to do with her. But I think, you know, she still sees me as a part of all that stuff. And, you know, and frankly, I mean, in my analysis of her, I think, you know, while Patti talks about how she's not a fan of her own and she doesn't listen to her albums, you know, and that's all very true, I also think that to some extent, as we all are, you know, part of her trip, her deal in this life is, you know, sort of chasing the stardom of Patti LuPone. And so, you know, I think, you know, to whatever extent she thinks about me and my fandom at all, I think it fits into that profile for her.
Mm. See, you mentioned a moment ago just how much you've struggled in your own life, and we get a lot of that, of course, in Bad with Money. When you work through, say, family estrangement, as you do in Patti issues, and you work through the dark moments in your life in Bad with Money on stage, night after night, is there any, say, catharsis at the end of the night when you're able to talk to a lot of people about what you've gone through?
Well, the catharsis is in me as a storyteller. You know, I mean, to a certain extent, it could almost be somebody else's story. The catharsis is that I'm taking the audience on a journey through this arc, you know. And, you know, in a way, being a performer and telling stories, that there was a sense of transference between me and the audience, or at least that's what I'm attempting, you know. So I'm kind of experiencing it through their eyes. You know, sort of like if you meet somebody and then you become Facebook friends and then you go on your Facebook page and try to, like, imagine what they think. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that is that TMI. But you know, I mean, in a way, that's what it's like. So it's less about my catharsis and my own experience of it in my life and more about my catharsis in the room with the spectator, with the participants, really.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you're on stage night after night and you're talking about these struggles, you know, with money, with drugs, with booze, I mean, do you hear back from the audience and say, and do they tell you just what, say, that's meant to them? And I mean, because there's something in your work that I'm sure audience members will probably get something out of that they didn't expect.
Yeah. Well, the most common response I've had to both of my shows has always been, it's not what I expected.
Yeah.
I don't know what expectations people have going to see a one-man play, an autobiographical one-man play, a solo piece about a Broadway diva, a solo piece about somebody's addiction issues and money. You know, I don't know what baggage, you know, they bring to that, but the most common response is that it wasn't what they expected. And I've had tremendously gratifying people's responses in terms of their own connection with, you know, the stuff I talk about, especially with that, with money. It's been very moving. I mean, you know, I kind of feel bad. I mean, you know, as much as you do a piece of work and you want people to relate, and bad with money, it's a little disturbing how many people do relate, you know.
Yeah.
It says a lot about where we are as a culture.
Yeah. Are you better with money now than, say, before?
Not at all.
No.
No.
But I guess our culture is like that, right? Is it? I mean, the consumer culture, I guess feeds into to where we are in terms of you know, how terrible we are with I guess taking care of ourselves, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
But it did get dark for you, didn't it? I mean, in terms of, say, not only addiction, but just how the sort of people, I guess, that came into your life, right?
I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, for me, the darkness is always things that I did. I don't know that I was ever so susceptible to influence by other people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the darkness is in feeling mired in a sickness. I mean, I don't know if you're talking about, like, the drugs or prostitution or whatever in Die With Money. You know, the funny thing is, for me, those things were dark in terms of the danger of engaging in those behaviors, but they also were not things that I stayed in ultimately that long, and they were things that I had a relatively easy time parting with, you know. I mean, kind of the point of that with money for me is how much it's the addiction that I can't quit, you know, or haven't been able to, and what a daily struggle that is. You know, and that's the darkness for me is sort of honestly looking at the fact that I'm now 41 and I still haven't, you know, this is a problem that I faced my whole life, but in the most pronounced way since, you know, being sort of on my own and, you know, leaving my parents' house at 18 or, if you want to say, after college or whatever.
Yeah.
But I really thought I would have found the light by now, you know, and I have to sort of face the fact that maybe there's not a little, like, maybe it's about one day at a time. You know, that's certainly the 12-step approach.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That doesn't appeal to me. I liked the way I was able to quit drugs and alcohol overnight, you know?
Yeah. When you look back, say, at the less than pleasant times in your life, I mean, is there a part of you at all that regrets what happened I don't know if blame is the right word, but I mean, can you find a moment in your life where it went wrong, and if you could go back, would you change it, say?
No, it's funny. You know, I have no regrets. I mean, that sounds like such a cliche, but You know, there's so much in my life that is so unique. And, you know, and I have, there's so much that brings me joy every day. And honestly, there always has been. I mean, even in my darkest moments, I've always been a very joyful person that has such a zest for life. And I just can't imagine, if you take out one of the cards from the House of Cards, you know, the whole thing falls apart. I mean, I think that my life has been my life. And I hope that I have the wisdom and strength to do what it takes to live a long life and have much more success and, you know, to take better care of myself and be a better friend and, you know, all that. But I wouldn't trade the life I've had.
It has been a pretty good life. I mean, we started the conversation talking about Patti LuPone. I mean, not many people get to meet their heroes and let alone meet them, but get to know them as intimately as you do, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, and that's just one thing. I mean, I feel very grateful. I mean, I spend my life doing something I love, and I'm never lonely and never bored, and I feel just excited by and inspired by and interested in so many things going on in the world around me by people that I know and by people that I don't know and people that I want to know. And I love theater and TV and movies, and, you know, I just find the world a fascinating and invigorating place.
Yeah. A lot of people know you as well through the Real Housewives series and the writing that you've done online about them, and you've appeared on the show. And I guess, are you directing the Countess's stage show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, hashtag Countess and Friends. People that know me through that are in for a big treat when they see me on the upcoming season of Real Housewives in New York City.
Yeah. What is, if you could take a moment to just step back and look at this Real Housewives phenomenon and what that's meant to the culture. We talked earlier in the interview, I mentioned Donald Trump, and just how fame and politics has sort of come together. I mean, they really have added to our conception of fame, this franchise, hasn't it?
You know, I think it's kind of an inevitable evolution. You know, I mean, growing up for me in the materialistic 80s and, you know, watching Dynasty on TV and all that, you know, I think we've been headed here since the 1940s with the movie magazine. You know, I think it's just the combination of our, the evolution of our pop culture, the development of our pop culture and technology coming together. And, you know, reality TV was birthed out of that, together with the internet. And, you know, I mean, look, Donald Trump is horrifying. I mean, you know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't curse him. But it also, you know, in a way, we got the president we deserve. You know, I mean, it's a reflection. It goes back to the money things. I mean, Donald Trump is a man who got famous for his bankruptcy. I mean, and his grandiosity. And I think that, I don't know what the answer is. You know, I think that the things that are sick in our culture like that are just going to keep getting sicker. I think it's on us to find new ways to take care of each other and be healthy. You know, I hope that those three steps forward can outnumber the two steps back. But I don't know. I mean, you know, it remains to be seen. I mean, you know, maybe it's going to be the end of the world. I think, you know, I can't blame my father for my problems in life or my parents or whatever. And, I can't blame Real Housewives for everything that's wrong with America or blame, you know. I think that we live in a world that is completely interconnected. I mean, what was that commercial where it's like a butterfly in China, weather patterns in Missouri? I don't remember, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's the universe. And I think, you know, it's up to us. What do they say? Think globally, act locally. I think, you know, all we can really do is the world that's in the room and the street in front of us, and, you know, try to do the best we can, and, you know, be the change we want to see in the world. And I don't know, you know, I enjoy The Housewives. I enjoy watching Dynasty as a kid. You know, I don't enjoy watching Donald Trump, but 3 years ago when he was insulting the other Republicans at the early debate, and I never thought he had a chance of being president. Maybe I was an idiot, but I wasn't so offended by him then. I thought it was hilarious. And I think there's a lot of people in his base who still kind of see him that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And while I can't get behind that, I certainly have celebrated people who are rude or disrespectful or loud. I've even emulated those things myself in times. I thought, you know, being politically correct was, like, stupid or small-minded. You know, and yeah. There's truth to that, too. You know, I think, I think everything is very nuanced and complicated. And, you know, I love technology and I love the interconnectedness. But also we live in a world that has become really about, you know, 180-character sound bites. And that doesn't leave room for the gray area of reality. And I think, I don't know how that's going to work itself out, but I think it's all part of the same thing right now.
As I told you before we started, I enjoyed both these pieces, Patty Issues and Bad With Money, because you have such a gift for storytelling and being a raconteur. Did that come to you, say, at an early age, that talent?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally. I needed the attention. I don't know, maybe because of my childhood, or maybe it's my chemistry or a combination or whatever, but I like feeling confident, but I'm also very insecure, and I sort of don't feel confident until I feel that I sort of won people over, you know, and I think maybe I'm too invested in what other people think, and in my drive to have people like me, being the center of attention is a more efficient way to achieve it.
And so when you're on stage and the energy that you get from the audience, what does that feel like?
It's amazing. You know, I feel everything I'm trying to feel in yoga and meditation and therapy. And, you know, when I'm on stage, I'm completely in the moment. And the moment feels so electric and real. And I don't think about any universe outside of that group of people, you know.
Yeah, this has been great fun talking to you. I appreciate your time. And I wish you good luck as these two pieces are now available on Audible, and really hope that people order them or pick them up, I guess, because they're in for a real treat. Thanks for your time today, Ben.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it, too.
BenRimmelauer.com is the website. Patty Issues and Bad With Money are now available at Audible. Ben Rimmelauer joined me on the line from New York City and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.